from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey! How we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Bye. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Taco Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So, you know what I do on my when the Astros don't play baseball?
You sleep.
What? We all sleep. What does that mean,
You get extra sleep.
No, I think.
I don't like that. Yeah, I don't like what that means, deep dives. And when you go deep dives.
It's not that deep of a dive. It's kind of surface
level.
Let's
hope not.
It's not a huge deep dive. But as I was sitting there thinking about the Houston Astros, as I was falling asleep late last night.
See?
Having my thoughts about, you know, what the Astros can do to improve this team.
Deep thoughts with Jeremy Branham.
I was telling my wife all the ideas that I had. She just rolled over and went to sleep. But no, I think the Astros should trade for Trey Mancini right now. They should trade for Trey Mancini right now. There's three reasons why here, too. Yuli Gurriel, first and foremost, 38-year-old, sub-700 OPS. Now, he is hitting better, so that's why, okay, well, there's other reasons to trade for Trey Mancini. We know that Yordan Alvarez has a busted-up hand. We don't know to what extent, right?
It's like, not busted up. It's just...
It's messed up.
You know what it is, Jeremy? It's
what? It might be busted up. We don't know.
There's discomfort.
There's a lot of discomfort.
It's just discomfort.
Which can mean 3 days. It could mean 3 months.
Yeah. Well, let's
hope the Houston Astros.
The earlier the two.
So the hand discomfort, another reason to trade for Trey Mancini right now. And the third one, too, like, whenever I was advocating for Trey Mancini was to replace Yuli Gurriel. Now there's more reasons. Like, one of them can still be Yuli Gurriel, but how about insurance to the discomforted hand of Yordan Alvarez?
Look, you won me over on that. You sold me on Trey Mancini. So I was in on Trey Mancini a while ago, regardless of why you wanted Trey Mancini. To get him made a lot of sense. Now what doesn't make sense to me is the fact that, twofold, I think that teams are going to start to zero in and see, especially those that end up falling short in the Benintendi sweepstakes, are going to start looking maybe in his way. But on the flip side, it's what I brought up to you yesterday, and ironically, there was an article this morning that said the Orioles could be buyers and possibly buyers and sellers at the deadline.
Yeah.
The only hope is that the seller factor still means they're going to get rid of a guy that is getting ready to get out if he wants to anyway in Mancini. But if they, you know, the two guys the Astros would have their eye on, and I think one they've cooled on if they had any interest previously, is Mullins, because of the fact that Jake has been such an encouraging sign in center field. But Mancini makes too much sense. We talked about the cavernous Camden Yards and how he did, you know, he could have so many more home runs if he hit in a different ballpark. And then we looked at the dimensions of Minute Maid and said, oh my God, give him Minute Maid's dimensions and he would be a masher. And because this team could use an extra bat no matter where you choose to use them, and like you said, with the new injuries, he could play DH and give you sticks there. He could play corner outfield. He could play first base.
Yeah, I was reading some quotes from Mike Elias, who's the general manager for Baltimore, and he said they're going to have a global philosophy with the organization at the trade deadline, which to me makes it seem like they're still going to rebuild. Like, they're still putting their rebuild ahead of this outside 10% chance that they could make one of the wild card spots in the AL. And, like, they've went through a hot streak, and yes, they are hot, and yes, they're whatever, however many games away from the wild card. They're also in last place in the AL East, and they also have the lowest chance of making the playoffs from the AL East. I think they're going to be like Seattle, and Mancini, who can walk at the end of this season. Mike Elias is an ROI guy. If he knows that Mancini could potentially leave in the offseason, then I believe he's probably going to try to trade Trey Mancini while he can get a pretty good offer for him, because he is one of the better bats on the market. Benintendi is. Josh Bell is on that as well. But the three reasons, I got to two of them. One of them because of the Yuli Gurriel, because he's been, you know, not great this year. He has been trending upward, which is great. You can get Mancini and still play Yuli Gurriel. The hand discomfort of Yordan Alvarez. But then also, like, this shoulder discomfort of Michael Brantley, that is something to be just as worried about as Yordan Alvarez's hand. That's something just as worrisome as Lance McCullers' UCL. So there's three reasons why a Trey Mancini could help you out, whether it's Yuli Gurriel's lousy at first base, whether Yordan Alvarez never gets over this hand discomfort, or if it's Michael Brantley that ever gets over to the shoulder discomfort.
When you look at Elias's philosophy, it's like a young teenager's dating rules, right? I mean, if you're young, you're fun, you're cheap, and you're productive, there's a chance that he's gonna want you around. But if you don't fit the characteristics, then there's no sense in carrying this on to a second date or going any further. And I think that's what he sees in Trey Mancini. It's been a great story. He's been a great guy to keep the whole organization afloat while they've been absolutely in Suckville. But he knows that they're close now, and he knows that the guys that there are more likely to do what he needs to do short and long term are guys a little younger with long team-controlled contracts. So I would think that Mancini still falls into all the characteristics of someone he'd like to get rid of and get more youth involved with in his organization, and that's encouraging for the Astros. And that relationship with the Astros, I think, helps because it's a good thing and a bad thing. He's more apt to want to make a deal with the Astros. He probably still knows people involved in the organization. He also knows the insides and outs and all the prospects for the most part in your system. So you got to be careful there because he might focus in on some guys you don't want to get rid of. But it depends on what the price tag is, but I still would love to see them. You know me, I'm going to say first and foremost, I still want bullpen help.
Yep.
But if you can get a Mancini and it doesn't cost you too much, I think it's in your best interest to do so because you know the Yankees are going to go out and get help.
I think it's going to cost you a handsome amount. I don't think it's going to be cheap. It's tough to say. Like, I don't know what the market's
dictating.
And
what are you willing to part with? Are you willing to part with, you know, some of your key names?
No, I'm not willing to part with Hunter Brown. I'm not willing to part with Luis Garcia. I'm not willing to part with Christian Javier. So it might take you out of the market.
Corey Lee?
Corey Lee, no. Okay. He's your future catcher.
Leon,
I think I would part with.
I think I might, too.
Yeah, Leon would be a name that I'd be willing to part with. Like, the most attractive names for the Houston Astros on the trade market, because, like, people don't like having this side of the conversation, if we're being completely honest with you. People love having, trade for Mancini, trade for Josh Bell, trade for David Robertson, trade for Cedric Mullins. I mean, trade for Jose Abreu. The list goes on and on and on. But the conversation that people don't want to have, which is the brutal honesty, is what you're given. And the most attractive names that the Astros, I don't even know they'd be willing to part with, but the ones that the other GMs are going to be asking for is Christian Javier. Is Luis Garcia. Is Urquidy on that list? I'm not sure that he is. It's definitely not Jake Odorizzi unless it's a contender, and you're not really going to trade a quality arm for Jake Odorizzi whenever you're a contender. And then there are the other names that you mentioned that are down in Sugarland. Hunter Brown, Corey Lee's up with the team now. He would be asked about. And probably Pedro Leon. Like, that's the part of the conversation people don't want to have. Of those names that I mentioned, the only one that I would be comfortable giving up is Pedro Leon. Like, Lee is your future catcher. He's your future backstop. Hunter Brown, they think, is going to be a future, you know, fixture in the starting rotation for a long time. Javier, we've seen his upside. We've seen Luis Garcia's upside. I'm not trading any of those guys for a dude that could leave at the end of the season, even if it's a big bat, and even if it's me saying hashtag trade for Trey. Like, I'm not trading those guys.
No, look, and I think that you're absolutely right. That's why I love the way we do our show, because we're going to cover both sides of it, and the harsh reality is you don't have the luxuries of a majority of the teams in Major League Baseball with stocked farm systems in which you can afford to give up, even if it's some of your top prospects. You always see it. You're not going to give up number one overall very often. But if you give up, say, 3, 12, and 27, but it gets you where you want to go.
But your 3, 12, and 27 might not be as good as somebody else's, like, 7 and 15. You know what I mean?
But also, that's where I was going with this. You also factor in your 3, 12, and 27. 3 and 12 might be on your Major League roster already because you know, it's a Luis Garcia. It's someone that skyrocketed through the minor leagues and got where you needed him to go, but now suddenly you're not willing to part with them, but you want what they got. Well, you can't give nothing to get something in return in this world and in this world of Major League Baseball.
I haven't looked at the Astros like top 10 prospects recently, but I would imagine that it's Hunter Brown, number one, who's on the cusp and knocking on the door of the big leagues, and if you didn't have a surplus in your pitching rotation, would probably be up on this team. Corey Lee, who is the catcher right now, is your number two catcher, who's up on the big league team. Pedro Leon would be in that mix, who is, you know, a call away from being up with this team as well. He's in AAA. And then probably Yainer Diaz is on that list somewhere, too. Those are probably your top four of, or at least four of the top five prospects that are all either in the bigs or in Sugarland. So it is interesting what the Astros have in their pipeline. It's not a great system. I mean, just go look up, you know, best minor league systems. The Astros are nowhere near the top. They're probably much closer to the bottom. And then what you do have are all either currently either in the bigs or knocking on the door of the bigs. The other reason that I'm high on Mancini, and again, yes, it definitely depends on the package, but the hashtag trade for Trey, like a lot, I posted this on Twitter earlier, and people will say, well, Josh Bell, well, Jose Abreu. Those guys, like, I'm not going to say no to those guys, especially if you can get them for cheap and they're also both in the final year of their deals. But the reason that I put Mancini higher on the list than an Abreu or a Josh Bell is because he gives you flexibility for three different scenarios that we just talked about. For whenever we first brought up Mancini's name, it was only as a replacement to Yuli Gurriel, and it is an upgrade. But also because you do have some injury concerns with Yordan Alvarez. You now have injury concerns with Michael Brantley. So the fact that you can bring in one player, because Josh Bell and Jose Abreu don't have the position flexibility, the fact that you can bring in one player to be insurance for all three of those guys is very attractive to me. He's insurance to a struggling Yuli Gurriel who has been better. Let me be very clear. He has been better. Stop coming at me with, I hate Yuli. I want Yuli to be successful and never get out the rest of the year. But insurance in case Yuli sucks again. He's insurance in case Brantley doesn't recover. He's insurance in case Yordan has a hamate injury and he's out for 6 weeks.
Here's the biggest thing about this. Look, as good as the Astros have been, there's a fragility that's involved in this that I don't think enough people...
Absolutely.
It's been going so good for so long that people don't realize how fragile the situation could be if Yordan is out for an extended period of time. You assumed that just like you're handling Yordan now, you were doing the same thing with Brantley so that he didn't miss extended time and he would, you know, between that now and the All-Star break, he'd be fine. Well, it doesn't look like that might be the case. So that gives you even more concern because as good as things have been, it only takes one or two of these guys to take a half step back and you could be reeling. You could be in a different position. Does that mean that you could still get to the playoffs? Of course. Does it mean that you could probably wrap up the 2 seed? Absolutely. And win your division? Sure.
Yep.
But does it mean you could go further in the playoffs? Absolutely not. Because these are factors that don't factor into the regular season, but are the only factor that matters going down to the stretch to get a World Series. You got to have them. And if you don't, you've got to have reasonable resources that can fill in until you do again.
You have assurances. Because, I mean, perfect case scenario. Best case scenario, Yuli Gurriel reverts back to the batting champion a year ago. Best case scenario, Yordan comes back for the Yankee series. We never hear about his hand injury again, and he has MVP form. Best case scenario, Michael Brantley comes back from the shoulder injury. Hadn't swung a bat, by the way. And he's back for the Yankee series, and we don't hear about him for the rest of the season as well. That's not realistic. And if you can trade for one guy that gives you assurances across the board for that, that's more interesting than a Jose Abreu. That's more interesting than a Josh Bell for me. What do you think? 713-780-ESPN. Does it make sense for the Astros to maybe look for other position scarcity as opposed to looking for the first baseman? Also, the fact that the Astros, they've been playing down all year, Blinkers. They've had injuries throughout the whole year. Can they continue to sustain the level of success they've had despite the injuries? All of the injuries for the Astros have led me to drinking a little more than I normally do. And what I usually love at the end of the day, and you know this, Gentle Ben, whether it's the vodka, whether it's the gin, whether it's the bourbon, I love them all. They're all part of the rotation for me. And we're going to be out there Thursday, by the way. You looking forward to that, Blinkers? Looking forward to being out at Gentle Ben?
I am, because it's an easy drive for me.
Yeah, it is right around the corner. July 14th, this Thursday from noon to 7, ESPN will be out at Gentle Ben, us till 3, the Wheelhouse 3 to 7. Swing on by, make sure you say hello to us. And try the outstanding spirits that are there. The bourbon, which is exclusive to the tasting room, 94-proof bourbon, winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year. It's exclusive to the tasting room in Alvin. Of course, Gentle Ben, a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits. They use their state-of-the-art, innovative Proseto craft technology that is better in taste, aroma, and purity than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in Gentle Ben. Also, they have a special event coming up a week from Saturday, Brown Water Event. It's a fundraising event benefiting wheelchairs for warriors. Dan Pastorini highlights a tremendous guest list, take in some live music, have some cocktails, all for a good cause. That's a week from Saturday, and you can find out more at gentlebin.com. And pick up some of their vodka and gin on the way home. You can find it at Total Wine, you can find it at Specs, and you can also visit them online at gentlebin.com. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Dr. Dre saying you don't need a trade for Mancini. Like, what is it? Like, do the Astros right. need to make a trade? Do they not need to make a trade? Because we get crushed either way.
Right.
The Astros are good enough to win the World Series. Oh, no, they're not. You're being irresponsible to the city of Houston. You're being irresponsible. The Astros have to do something. Now you're telling me they don't need a trade? Like, pick which one it is.
Yeah, I don't get it because we got a couple other texts, too, that are like, oh, the Jeremy and Joel, like, we're like, whitewashing you guys on the fact that the Astros are good now. When we're critical, we're a-holes. When we're not and we're sunshine and rainbows, then we're D-bags. I mean, take your pick, but the bottom line is we're honest. And the fact is, even Dre, my boy, I would say, well, then what do you want? Because if you get mad, and this was where Jeremy and I disagreed, I still thought they needed to make a move in the bullpen. But Jeremy at one point said, they're good standing pat just the way they are. They could still win the World Series. If you believe that, which I think you pushed back at the time.
I still do.
I know you do, but I think he pushed back. Well, then tell me what you would do. Because to me, it's all about still adding, ideally for me, I would like two arms in the bullpen between now and the deadline. That's what I would like to enhance the bullpen. The discussion about Trey Mancini, as I've said, Jeremy has won me over on that discussion. I believe it makes sense. It would make sense if they weren't dealing with injuries or slumping hitters. But the fact that they're getting guys that are coming out of slumps, which you hope they stay maintaining where they are now and better, but you don't know. And with Yordan's, the uncertainty around his injury, it makes sense to give yourself insurance. Yep. Because you only get so many chances to make runs like this so that you have your best chance to win it all, not just get there like last year and then find a way because of injury to bow out short of the championship.
The three concerns that I have right now on July 12th with the Astros offensively, Yuli Gurriel's been on an uptick, so like that has alleviated some of my fear, but not entirely. I mean, he can revert back to what we saw in the first few months.
Bregman doing what he's doing along with Yuli has helped to kind of
It's made the offense longer. Yes. There's a reason that the numbers were better in June, and they've been really good so far in July, and it's because of the uptick of Bregman. It's because of the uptick in Yuli Gurriel. But if I had three fears right now about the Houston Astros offense, and I want to be very clear, too, because people were texting in 713-780-ESPN, and you mentioned this, too. I think we're thinking too much on the offensive side of the baseball. The glaring need to me is a darn good bullpen. Lefty, I don't trust Blake Taylor for that. Okay. The fact that we're talking about the offense does not preclude them making a trade as well for the bullpen. It's not. I'm not saying forget about the bullpen. Forget about the trade market of the arms. I'm not saying that. I'm saying let's look at Trey Mancini versus Josh Bell. Let's look at Trey Mancini. Jose Abreu hasn't really been thought of as out on the market, but since the White Sox have been a disaster and Tony La Russa looks like he's 25 years too old for the job, it looks like they could potentially be sellers as well. But so, like, this Trey Mancini conversation isn't about ignoring the bullpen. Like, that's a conversation for a different time. We could have it at some point today, too. But whenever you look at this offense, the biggest three fears I have, Yuli Gurriel being old and being washed, he's proven me wrong, so, like, the last few weeks, willing to eat crow on that right now, but I'm not going to say that he's going to do this for the rest of the year.
With ketchup?
Well, no, not with ketchup. No, I like a little bit of, what's that?
You like a medium chula. Rare crow?
No, I like the little. You got to have a little spice when you're eating a bird.
You got to put something on it because otherwise it's going to taste.
I like a little pica when I'm eating my bird. I like a little.
It tastes
pica
like
when
a rodent with wings. You might as well try and disguise it.
Yeah, I got a stomach of iron steel. I'm not really worried about it. But the three fears: Yuli,
yep,
Yordan's hand, and I would even say Michael Brantley's shoulder's more worrisome than Yordan's hand for me. Like worst case scenario, Yordan Alvarez after the All-Star break, they're like, okay, you need surgery. You're out 6 to 8 weeks, and you have him back before the playoffs. Michael Brantley, the shoulder that doesn't look like it's getting better, he's a lot older than Yordan Alvarez. I don't know if we should expect anything from Michael Brantley the rest of the year. Like, I don't know what this injury is. No one does. It's discomfort.
It's discomfort again. And that's the thing that's very much creates discomfort within my thinking process, internalizing what's going on with the Astros. I would rather know and identify this is what it is. It could take this long or it could take that long, but I know the window. And I know exactly pinpointed what the issue is. The more we hear discomfort, the more we're not giving away any details, and he spends more time on the IL, the more I have concerns about him possibly not being ready to come back. I'm sorry. It's the same way I think about Lance McCullers, only maybe more magnified with McCullers because he hasn't played all year. But with a Brantley, we know you're a better team when he's in the lineup because he's just a stick. He's just a really, really solid hitter. But you got to have your best players when you go into the playoffs, And if you can't, you got to have the best case scenario to replace him. And that's why adding a Mancini would help. And Todd, the show says, well, you know, sometimes he's only hot for a month or so. Guess what? He doesn't have to be hot all the time because of this lineup. It'll be the best lineup he's ever hit in.
Yeah.
And he'll see better pitches.
Yeah, I haven't even like started to think where you would place Mancini in the lineup. But if you had Yordan back and then Mancini hitting in front of him, that's kind of terrifying, the pitches that Mancini would see. 713-780-3776. Someone's saying Andrew Benintendi. Like, make him a Houston Astro.
The bidding war on Benintendi is going to get higher and deeper by the day.
And the reason that Benintendi, I don't really love Benintendi as an option as well, is he doesn't really give me the assurance of the three concerns that I have. Like, is that fixing first base if Yuli finds his struggles from the first couple of months again? Not really. Who's going to play first base? Like, Benintendi's never played first.
No.
Brantley, I think, has done it for like one game over the course of his career. Benintendi does have the assurance of like, okay, well, now you have your insurance policy in left field. But if Brantley comes back, now he's your right fielder, Tucker's your center fielder. Yes, that's a slightly better offense, but I think it's a much worse defense.
Yeah,
I feel like you're losing
never
more runs than you're creating.
In his life.
He has, but it's 3 years ago, and he was poor.
I'm saying, like, consistently and for a good team, right?
Yeah, Boston was good when he was there.
Yeah, but was he all the time the center fielder?
For a good chunk of the 19 season he played center field.
Wasn't that Bradley Jr.?
I think he was hurt, before they had him. He played a good chunk of center field for a while, and was really bad at it. That's why they moved on
from
him.
Right, and that's why they said since then that he just doesn't belong in center field. He's obviously a guy with speed, but as it relates to playing solid defense in a middle outfielder position, it doesn't translate. It's not the right move for you to make. So if you're not going to upgrade center field, and you're going to get in a bidding war with teams that have deeper farm systems and more to give than you do, does it make sense? Why wouldn't you focus on a guy instead like Mancini, who seems to be the odd guy out no matter what Baltimore does, which is a good thing for you. And while everybody's still focused on Benintendi until they're told no, get involved in the guy that maybe you can get before the first deal is done and not have to worry about guys with the residuals coming off of Benintendi going, now let's focus on Mancini, see if we can still get someone to add a bat.
He's played 71 games in his career in center field. He played 12 and 19, 24 and 18, 30 and 17. In all of those years, he was bad at it.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought. I don't think he had played a full season there.
Yeah, I was looking at the career stuff. But either way, he's been bad at center field. He's not played center field. He's not a center fielder. So if you get Andrew Benintendi, he's playing left field, Brantley's playing right, and now you're looking at Kyle Tucker in center field. Do you add runs offensively? Yeah. Andrew Benintendi is a better offensive player than Jake Myers. But are you creating more runs than you're saving? I doubt it. And also, James Click's very much into run prevention. Like, if you listen to that dude talk, it's like run prevention. They believe a lot in what a team can provide defensively. I don't think they like the idea of Tucker in center. Remember, they thought that Tucker was going to be the center fielder last year when they traded Miles Straw. Yeah. And it's like, nope, that's not going to happen either.
See, and Texan Matt says, what about Michael A. Taylor? I actually thought about him when the Astros were playing the Royals. I just don't believe in his bat all that much. You know, I think that no matter what lineup he's been on, he's been okay. But I think that if you're going to make a trade where you have to part with some pieces that you otherwise don't feel comfortable parting with because you're depleted in a lot of ways with you from your youth, I don't think he's worth it enough to give up any kind of quality pieces in return. Whereas the other guys have shown the way they hit the ball alone that they're worth giving up something for because they're going to make you better.
Michael Taylor, to me, is a perfect fit for the Yankees because if the Yankees trade for Michael Taylor, now you're playing him in center field, so you don't have to deal with that debacle of a defensive center fielder in Aaron Judge because he's terrible defensively. So now you would probably move Judge to right, stand back to your DH, and you get rid of the at-bats of Joey Gallo. I think Michael Taylor ends up in New York.
Do we think that first of all, I still think they're going to go Benintendi first.
Mancini?
Yeah.
I think Benintendi's high on their list because they need a fit in left field. But I also think that they view that center field spot and like the fact that they're losing runs defensively with Judge in center field as an area where they feel like they can improve. That's why I think Michael Taylor ends up there.
Why?
I think they could get both, honestly, Taylor and Benintendi.
I would agree with that. But why in the world do you not still play Aaron? You're going to play Aaron Hicks anyway.
They're playing him in left.
I know they're playing him in left, but he has been a better center fielder than Aaron Judge. Why not just he's got a cannon for an arm, too.
Yeah.
Why not just move? As long as you're going to play him, because a lot of it was he wasn't hitting, and so they were trying to hide him.
Yeah.
If you're going to play him in center field.
Well, they're doing like kind of a platoon. Like you see Gleyber out there at times in left field,
which
and also I remember reading that the reason they play Judge in center is so Stanton can play right field and then get Joey Gallo in right field a little bit too. Like, the idea was to get Stanton, Gallo, and Judge all in the lineup at the same time. But because Gallo's been so bad offensively, they're like, well, screw that idea. We can just play Judge in right field again and let Stanton DH. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, the Astros pretty much all year long have not been at full health. They've been playing down all year. Can they continue to sustain it now without Yordan Alvarez? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
We have some folks asking us, Ocho on the text line, 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I love the fact that this dude's name on Twitter is at Burner. His name is Burner on Twitter. And then Apollo Dez talking about this too. The third wild card spot is the game changer. Baltimore is two back. Typical sellers might hold serve. The fact that there are six teams that make the playoffs from each league now, I am curious to see what the market looks like with baseball going to six playoff teams in every league for the first time in history. So I'm very intrigued to see how that all plays out. But Mike Elias was, of course, the right-hand man for Jeff Luhnow, and the Astros were building what is now turned into the best baseball organization in the last whatever many years. People call me a homer. Whenever I say that, I would say it's fact, not
that.
An opinion.
You don't have to say that, and they'll say that.
That's true. But Elias, I was reading up on the Baltimore Sun today, and they talked about this run that Baltimore's on. The Orioles have been red hot. I mean, they've been sweeping. They swept the Angels, which, I mean, good job there. But anyways, they asked Elias about the trade deadline, the fact that they are in the playoff hunt despite being in last place in the American League East. And Elias said this, and I'm curious your translation. In this job, everything that I do or that we do has trade-offs. And all I can say is we do everything from a very global, very thoughtful perspective about what is the right thing to do for the health of the Orioles franchise. And all that's being taken into consideration for the draft. The draft comes up Sunday, actually. But also for the trade deadline coming up. And I don't know what's going to happen. What I'm saying is we're taking a look at everything as we make these decisions, and we'll see what happens.
Exactly what I would say is, as we kind of compare this to what we've said about the Texans in the past, he's calculated, he's got a plan. It's about the long-term success and sustainability of the Orioles, who have been down for so long. They're not going to, this is exactly why I started Embrace the Suck. His whole philosophy is based around, we are not going to be enamored with a short-term one-season run to get a playoff berth,
yeah,
and let that completely throw a monkey wrench in our plan.
That's a great comparison.
To get back and be back for a long period of time.
If the Texans were, I don't know how many games before the NFL trade deadline, what is it about? Is it about 7, 8, 9 games, something like that? But it's November 2nd this past year. Of course, it'll change next year. Let's just say that it's 8 games into the NFL season. If the Houston Texans are 4-4 through 8 games of next season's NFL season, and let's just say they're tied for the last wild card spot in the AFC, do you want the Houston Texans to trade like future draft picks or future blocks to what is a rebuild for like a rental? Do you want the Texans to do that? I don't think that they would.
Fingertips, text if you want, keyboard if you will, but the unpopular answer is no, I don't.
Is that unpopular, though?
There are so many people, Jeremy, and I find out more and more on a daily basis, the diehard Texan fan that is willing to abort the future and the plan that has been put in place if there's any sliver of hope that they can win for a season and get back in the playoffs. And I don't understand the unrealistic thinking of those fans, because the short-term gratification is going to give you such agony over the long term, because it's going to disrupt everything that's been being put into place, lining up the dominoes so that you can make another run, so you can be relevant for a good long time, and you're willing to trash all of that just because you got a chance to get the last wild card and then get blasted in the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, see, Baltimore, and Mike Elias is a smart dude, and he's a numbers dude. As we know, Jeff Luhnow was a numbers dude. The Orioles have a 10% chance of making the playoffs. Like, Elias isn't going to be keeping Trey Mancini when he could risk losing him at the end of the year when there's a 10% chance they can make the playoffs. And he's not really, like, if they win in 2022, that's great. But he's looking at the long term. He's not looking at the 2022. The very fact that he said global, to me, tells me everything that that you should know. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Yordan Alvarez is going to be out through the All-Star break. Hopefully it's not longer than that. We don't know the injury. That's the frustrating thing. The Astros aren't going to tell you. They're going to tell you discomfort. That stinks that you don't know what the injury is. So it is something that is a concern. But the Astros have really been shorthanded all year long, right? Like, Jeremy Pena's had a couple of stints on the IL. We forget that Jose Altuve at the very start of the season had a stint on the IL. Michael Brantley, like, you kind of forget that he's been hurt because the Astros continue to win. Jake Odorizzi, if you want to throw him in that conversation, a stint on the injured list. And I won't even bring up Lance McCullers. So, if we look at it from the Astros' offensive side of things, they've really been shorthanded almost the entire season. They've played very few games with all of their position players available and not on the IL. Do you think that the Astros can sustain that without Yordan Alvarez? And obviously the time frame that Yordan's out is a huge variable in that question.
Well, I think so because of what we've been talking about and what I've been preaching, which is that they have a luxury that only the Yankees have in Major League Baseball, and they don't have the record or the publicity that goes with what the Yankees are doing. They're just doing what they've been doing all year long. They're handling their business, and they're doing it in a division that is mediocre, to give them a compliment. It's a cakewalk. And so you're strolling through the park to win the division. You're going to have that. You got such a lead over even the Twins, and you got that number two spot wrapped up, that we said that your new division is the American League, and you're in second place chasing the Yankees, and that didn't look like it was completely out of reach. If the biggest drawback through all of this is that you don't catch the Yankees, so be it. You're in a great spot, and as long as Yordan will be back, you are going to be just fine. It's that never want to fathom it, think about it, and make it something that has to be feasible, playing without Yordan in the playoffs, that scares the absolute bejesus out of me. Other than that, they are going to be fine because they have such a big lead in the division, and they have the third easiest schedule in baseball from now till the end of the regular season, in large part because of how bad their division is. They're going to be fine. They just run two out of three with the A's without Yordan, without Brantley. They're just fine.
To me, it depends on the extent of the injury, like the calendar. If he's back for the Yankee series, yeah, you can sustain that. And I think it's critical for a couple of names to, like, Bregman's got to continue to play well. Yuli, I'm not even calling for Yuli to be batting champion. Yuli just can't be what you were in the first couple of months of the year. And then you want Tucker to sustain, you know, the all-star level of success he's had to this point. They were talking about Yordan Alvarez, the hand injury. Every radio show in the city was. Why wouldn't you? It was the lead story. But Stutz was talking about the injury, Yordan's injury, and he had one of the all-time terrible takes. Like, he makes fun of me, of course, with Bad Take Boulevard. When he's mistakenly given me, like, ownership on Bad Take Boulevard, when, quite frankly, it's Terrific Take Terrace. In my opinion, Cody's the president of Bad Take Boulevard, and this is an example of that when talking about the Yordan injury and injuries in general.
You know how I feel about rest being the prescription for something that's wrong with an athlete. It's one of the most dangerous things you can get prescribed from the doctors. Oh, just rest it. That means you know how to fix it and you don't want to fix it, is typically what that means. So,
what? W-U-T, what? Like, 90% of injuries that you have are fixed with rest. What do you do when you sprain an ankle? It's the Rice method. What's the R in Rice? It's rest. What do you do when you have a concussion? You rest.
Can you, like, explain to people
what
the Rice?
Yeah, it's Rice. It's an acronym.
Rest.
Rest, ice, compression, elevate.
Right.
I've had many ankle sprains in my life. I know the Rice method way too well. Just like I know the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Especially stupid part. But 90% of injuries are cured because of rest.
Yeah, I think that the biggest issue that I have with all of that is if you know that it doesn't need surgery. Right, you know, it's just wear and tear. A lot of these injuries are based on excessive wear and tear. Everybody thinks, oh, you only swung the bat five times. You had five at bats the other night. Do you think about how many minutes you were in the batter's box in batting practice? Do you think how many extra swings you got in the cages? All the different things that you're working on your swing all day long, every single day, and the fact that rest can take a nagging, reoccurring injury and give it time to heal, so that it's okay. So that you make progress, so that it isn't hampering him and bothering him, and that medically that is the solution, along with the ice and everything else, and the stim and every medical fixer known to mankind they have. It's absolutely the right thing in a lot of ways. I mean, I don't know if it's the Justin Verlander situation that's clouding this, where you think that he rested too long, waiting to see if he needed Tommy John or not, and then he needed Tommy John. Because otherwise, there's tons of times. The worst thing you can do on a sprained ankle is go out there and keep playing on it, because it's going to get worse.
Or have surgery with not needing the surgery. Like, rest is what it takes to heal 90% of the time. Now, if you need a surgical procedure, you have a surgical procedure. Rest isn't going to fix that. But rest is what should be prescribed to anybody that's injured. Now, I do get where Cody's coming from in the sense of, like, if you knew that Jordan, like, whatever injury he has could be fixed with surgery, just go ahead and do the surgery now. Like, if it was a handmade injury, and this is the problem that we just don't know. So it's hard to have these educated conversations because we literally do not know what the injury is. If the Astros came out and told you, look, it's the handmade, but it's not broken, but the continuous stress of the injury is going to eventually lead to the handmade breaking, well, then that's when you just have the surgery, right? You eat the 6 to 8 weeks, like Wander Franco's having it like this week. He had that same injury. So you just have it, you get out of the way, you get him back as soon as you can have him back. But we don't know if this injury is going to require surgery. We don't even know if it's the hamate. Dusty Baker told us it wasn't. James Click said that they feared it was, but that it wasn't. And now it's re-aggravated again. Like, it could just be a jammed thumb. It could be a jammed finger. We really have no idea. Yeah,
we can't over-assume, right? I mean, we are...
It's scary. I get that.
For sure. Because we are at the mercy of a PR department that is going to tell you nothing. It's scary because we're also dealing with a franchise that is going to border on staying away and avoiding surgery at all costs. We saw it with Verlander, where you could have bought yourself some time that, not maybe realistically, but conceivably, he could have been a part of last year's playoff run, especially when you lost McCullers, had he had the surgery immediately when you knew he needed it. But because you dragged your feet...
But he never had one.
And you fought...
You talking about Verlander or McCullers?
Talking Verlander.
Oh, I thought you said McCullers.
I'm talking
my
Verlander.
Bad. My bad.
I'm going to roll that into McCullers, though, and say, just like we don't know if there was a surgical procedure that could have taken care of what Lance had going on. But if there was, that's why I have such a hot button for the fact that he's not pitching and he hasn't pitched all year when it was supposed to be rectified with rest in this offseason. This franchise likes to border on avoiding surgery and the big medical procedure, and that's worrisome to me.
Yeah, like, I'm worried about Jordan, but it could be a jammed finger. Like, it could be anything from a jammed finger to a broken hamate. Like, if it's a hamate, obviously you have the surgery. If it's a jammed finger, like, yeah, rest. Rest should be what you're prescribed, and 90% of injuries are fixed with rest. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, name that tune. We've been naming that Texans tune, predicting where the Texans are going to finish, scoring defense, scoring offense, passing offense. We have a bidding game where we are willing to go a certain degree. Like, I've been top 23 for the scoring defense, top 25 for the scoring offense, top 27 for the passing offense. I've won them all so far. I'm winning all the bids. Let's do the rushing offense when we return. If I win all of these bids, I win all five, I'm going to have to go to HRMP. I'm going to have to go to Human Resources and Payroll, saying that Blankers isn't participating in work activities. Of course, HRMP, Cougar owned by Mike Holley, members of the Cougar 100 for the eighth year in a row, going on a decade now. And you've seen the HRMP signage at the U of H games. You've seen their building off the Beltway. And business owners, let HRMP help you. Whether it's HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding, HRMP can help in any or all of those areas. There's no boxes with HRMP. Doesn't matter how small, doesn't matter how big. HRMP will completely customize a plan for what you and your business needs. If you have a problem or an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, you want to take a lot off your plate, you want to give them the whole plate, HRMP will find a way to help. And they do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best tech. You'll love that, but you'll also love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You won't be talking to a stranger on a call board. You'll be talking to someone who knows your business needs. I emailed HRMP yesterday. I was talking to them about some of the upcoming days off I'll need. They gave me a quick answer that I love. So if you're an employer, help out your employees. Give them something that's very easy for them to use and give HRMP a call at 281-880-6525. Let HRMP customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. No lights come on when the crowd goes wild. Fun sports. In
informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I jammed my finger in the door.
In the door?
Yeah, that didn't feel good. Didn't feel good.
How, wanna, well, first of all, Todd, how does that happen?
I don't know. But you know
there's
what
these things called door handles, and if you keep your hand on the handle, you don't put your fingers in harm's way.
You know what's going to cure it, though? Rest.
Rest?
Rest is going to make it feel so much better. Right best now, prescription you can give me.
Are you experiencing pointer finger discomfort?
A lot of discomfort. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. You think I can call up HR&P and get a couple days?
Well, you can't call the Astros because they're not going to reveal anything.
Can I get a free vacation by going on a stint of the ESPN 97.5 IL and rest it up? I mean, rest cures everything.
I don't believe we have an IL here.
Do you need your finger to do the show?
Yeah, it's critical. Mm-hmm. I got to press this off button whenever I cough. Sometimes I need to press the dump button, the two times I've done that in my life. Anyways, it's time to name that Texans tune where we bid on how high we're willing to go, how optimistic we're willing to get about the 2022 Houston Texans. Today is our fourth category. So far, we've done scoring defense. I have the Texans in the top 23. We've done scoring offense. I have the Texans in the top 25. We've done passing offense. I have the Texans.
What are you, Cody in the top Stoops 27. Now, the way you're self-promoting?
I'm just telling you the results of our first previous
I know what
three
the results
bids.
Are, but you're overselling to try to get people, maybe to justify in your own mind that you made the right call.
Just totally optimistic, Branham. You know how I can always be optimistic. But we also have a little bit of skin in the game here. The loser is going to buy the winner lunch at the conclusion of the 2022 season. So we have all season to prepare for this. So start saving your nickel a day so you can pay for lunch
Frankie's
at the end of the
Italian
year.
Frankie's Italian Kitchen has lunch and dinner specials available. Hey. Just go to frankiesitaliankitchentx.com.
Don't threaten me with a good time, Blankers. I'd gladly go to Frankie's Italian Kitchen. You kidding me? Frankie's Friday Fire will be here before you know it, by the way. But anyways, today is the rushing offense. How good the Texans rushing offense is going to be and how we're going to bid to see how far we're willing to go. Blankers has the first bid today. You have to start with top 31. Do you think the Texans will be top 31 in total rushing?
I do. Look at me. I am so optimistic. Yeah. I am so glass half full today. I believe the Texans will be as good as 31st in the league in rushing. Really, what says you, Jeremy Branham?
Really out on the ledge there, saying Woo! Top 31. Well, I like the fact that they got Marlon Mack. People think he's going to have a career resurgence. They think he's like a former All-Pro or something. Roll my eyes at that, tongue firmly in cheek. Damian Pierce, fourth rounder from Florida. Like, people love Damian Pierce. He's also a fourth rounder. Like, teams passed on Damian Pierce at least three times. That's true. But, I mean, you had running backs taken late first, early second.
What did you just Michael Kamey?
31. I'll go. You said 31. Already,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. I'll go top 30. Texans will be top 30 in rushing offense in 2022.
I will go top 29.
Man, I didn't think you were going to do that. I thought I was going to
get
top
30. I'm going to go top
29
because you also used a first round pick on a guard. You have, depending on how much you want to argue the point, if you're a lawyer or not, one of the top left tackles in the game returning. You have Titus Howard going to right tackle, and hopefully keeping him there will help solidify the offensive line even further. And then, like you said, you've got a young and a experienced running back that probably has more left in the tank than the entire gas tank that you had a year ago in that Edsel you had running behind center last year. I think that they can do enough to do more than they did last year by that big of a jump. I think that they're okay.
Are you trying to sell me into 28?
Yeah.
It sounds like a sell job. You're trying to get me to bid on 28. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're playing a poker game, and you're trying to bluff me into taking the Houston Texans as a top 28 rushing offense. Look, I have the Texans top 25 scoring offense. I have them top 27 passing offense. So I feel like I should double down on this again. This is the same thing I had yesterday, where I was thinking, okay, well, if I have the Texans top 25 scoring, I feel safe that they'd be in the top 27 passing. So the offense might be where I lose or win this thing. So I'm willing to go up to 28.
Your optimism might be that way, too.
Yeah, I'm so optimistic.
Your optimism might sell you, force you to have to buy a lunch, too.
I'm so optimistic that I have the Texans top 23 defense, top 25 offense, top 27 passing, and now top 28 in running the football.
Okay.
You want to go to 27, Blankers?
I'm thinking about it.
This reminds me of that old Domino game, 42. Used to play with my grandparents.
Nope.
Never played 42?
Out. Nope. man. Gin and gin rummy.
That's how I know you're not from Texas.
Yeah, definitely not that. You ever played bar dice?
Yeah.
That was big on road trips on the buses in the aisle. 27, huh? Nope.
You're going to give me 28? I feel good about it. I feel good about it.
Okay.
Like, if I had the Texans' top 25 scoring offense, I feel great that I have top 27 passing offense and top 28 rushing offense. Like, the Texans could finish 26th in scoring offense. I would tank that one, lose that one, but I'm probably winning the passing offense and the rushing offense.
Well, then call it a push and hope for it.
I think, well, it would be more than a push. It'd be 2-1.
Well, you're not going to get it. So, I mean, you can dream until, you know, your heart's content.
Game theory here has been fantastic for me, I think. 713-780-3776, though. What do you think? Do you think the Houston Texans will have a top 28 rushing offense? I think you said it yourself of why I think they'll be top 28. They have two better running backs on this team than they did last year. We don't have to see 20 carries from the Fighting Rex Burkhead. On top of that, you mentioned the offensive line. Like, Laremy Tunsil was on this team last year, but was he really on this team last year, if you catch what I'm cooking? Tytus Howard, like, he needs to play one position. We've been saying that for years. He's not lived up to his potential. I blame the Texans more for him not living up to his potential than I blame Tytus Howard. They have a legit, really good left guard who they spent a first-round draft pick in the teens to select. Kenny Britt, whatever, I think he's just a guy, and I think Khan is just a guy, if I'm being completely honest. But I think overall the offensive line's going to be better. And I also think that they have to be committed to the run game for the benefit of Davis Mills. Like, I think they will be willing to run the ball and not have success because of how important it is to run the ball to free some things open for Davis Mills.
I think one way or the other, I think that there's going to be an improvement enough that I'll probably lose one of the two, but I'll take my chances. I think that I've already said that I'm so optimistic that they're going to make improvement in both categories. I believe that I've shown you that I believe in this team enough to know that they're going to make a jump and a leap in certain cases to get better than they were a year ago. But do I think my chances are that I'm going to actually win both of those? No, but I'm hedging it enough to say I feel good where I'm at. I've shown my optimism towards the team, but I've shown my realistic approach to not want to buy lunch.
I don't know. I feel like you might be buying lunch. Brendan, whenever we started this game, because we only have one more category, which tomorrow we're going to be doing the draft slot, where we think the Texans draft slot is. We're going to do the whole bid game again, like 42. Whenever we started this game, did you think that one person would have all four of the first four categories?
I was thinking after today that, you know, I didn't put that thought into it, but it's actually so obvious. It is so predictable that you go higher on Joel on every single one of these things.
Why?
I think you're more optimistic on the Texans. I think you might just be more optimistic in general in Houston sports, because I think you're more optimistic on the Astros. Not as significantly.
Why are you laughing at that?
You know exactly why.
Because I get called a homer?
You get a call to homer, and then one day you get called someone that's too optimistic, and the next day...
I'm not saying he's too optimistic.
Wait, but what I'm saying is that one day he gets called all those things, and the next day he's a hater
we're talking about
ready to bury Yuli, and Bregman sucks.
But I mean, like, we're like, what, 2 weeks removed from you guys debating whether or not they needed to make a trade and him saying no? Like, I just think Jeremy leans a little bit more optimistic than you.
I also said it's time to old yeller Yuli.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
I don't think
the gap is as significant with the Astros as the Texans, but honestly, Jeremy, yeah, this is predictable. I am very curious about tomorrow because I don't even know exactly how we're doing it yet. But I think tomorrow could be a battle for draft slot.
Yeah, see, are we going from like one up, or are we going from 32
we'll
down?
To figure that out on the or off the air, but I think tomorrow will be an interesting one.
Yeah. See, the running game for the Texans, though, do you think it'll be in the top 27? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Like, when we started this, this was going to be like a killer bee. How optimistic, how realistic will we be with the Houston Texans? If you eliminate, like, let's eliminate who won the bids. But top 23 scoring defense for the Texans, top 25 scoring offense, these are all better than they did last year. Their passing offense, top 27, their rushing offense, top 28. Like, if we're trying to put that into a record right now, what does that give you? What is a top 23 scoring offense, top 23 scoring defense, top 25 scoring offense? What does that translate to over the course of a 17 game season?
In terms of the overall
record, what does top 23 defense, top 25 offense get you?
Six.
See, I think that's even probably at the high end of that range. Like,
do you?
Yeah, I think six is the right
coming
answer.
Coming from where you're coming from. And also knowing that the people that are executing it for you means they got better.
Sure, but that doesn't matter because it's still translated into a top 23 scoring D and a top 25 scoring offense. Like, I think to me, if you had a 23rd ranked defense in the NFL and a 25th ranked offense in the NFL, I think you're looking at a 5-12 record. I don't think it's overly optimistic.
It's just scary to me because of the fact that those jumps on both aspects of your offense.
It is a jump.
Means that I think it could keep you in more games.
Let's just say Team X, though. Team X in the NFL finished 23rd in the NFL in defense. They finished 25th in the NFL in offense. That's a bad team.
At four.
That's a bad team.
That's four.
That's not a good team. Like, I don't understand the overly optimistic, oh, Texans, 23rd defense, 25th offense. Because you pair that together, that's a 5-12 team. That's still a bad football team.
I mean, the actual most optimistic person on the Texans on the show is probably me.
What do you think that record is, though? A 23rd defense, 25th offense in the NFL. What does that translate to in wins and losses in the NFL?
Between 3-7?
Yeah. That's not good.
Which I think is probably fair.
Yeah, their over-under is 4.5. It's like right in the middle.
I would lean towards the higher side of it, but I think that's a fair range.
Man, I find it hard to believe that a team 23rd in defense, 25th in offense would win 7 games.
Still 10 losses.
Yeah. Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. You tell us. You're the experts. A team in the NFL has the 23rd ranked defense, the 25th ranked offense. Where do they rank?
I'll tell you one thing. That's a balanced record team.
It's a balanced team.
Not in a good way, but it is a balanced team.
It's a bad balanced team. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, and their passing offense is 27th and their running offense is 28th. That's a poor offense in the NFL. All right, what's the more likely Texans scenario? This is an interesting one. The Browns are bad enough for you to receive a top 5 pick, or the Texans play meaningful games with playoff ramifications towards the end of the regular season. It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them forever and a day because I've seen the results, and so have so many of you that heard what I was saying, got in touch with Apollo, and turned your life around. Your health is your wealth, and you have to invest in yourself just like you invest in the stock market. The way you do it best is you get in contact with the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Tell them what you got going on. Tell them where you're very disappointed or really kind of depressed about what you're not able to do or the energy you don't have or the workouts you can't get in, all these different things. And then they're going to set you on a program that gets you results, gets you feeling great, and gets you back to believing you can do those things again. It's fantastic. Go to ApolloMH.com and see all the different services that they have that can help you and realize everything from stuff for your smoothies and fat burners and all the different things that you want to implement on a daily basis to a workout program that involves body composition analysis or recover quicker with HGH peptide therapy or all the different ways that can get more energy in your life from B12 shots to, for both men and women, HGH peptide therapy and all those different hormone therapy options for men and for women that get them all that extra energy on a daily basis. Check them out today, ApolloMH.com. Book that first appointment. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted. They'll take care of you with discounts for military personnel and first responders, but more so than anything else, they're going to take care of you because you're a patient and they care about you. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.